What is the story of CentraCare? I mean, your story is staggeringly big. You touch so many lives, and you intersect with us in the most important and essential, intimate and vulnerable moments of our lives. Because of you and the work you do, there is more love in the world, more joy, more good, because the people you take care of have families, lead lives, go to work, fall in love, are somebody's best friend. This is the podcast about the people, the purpose, and the stories of CentraCare and Caris Health. I'm Richard Schooley. Welcome to One CentraCare. Today, I'm going to talk with the three people who lead the clinical divisions of CentraCare. The first time, by the way, clinical caregivers lead all of the caregiving divisions within the organization. My guests are Dr. Tom Schrupp, who is the chief physician officer and leads the clinical partners, doctors, advanced practice providers, and professional caregivers. And Joy Plowman, most recently the CNO, now president of St. Cloud Hospital and vice president of central operations. And Dr. Cindy Firkin-Smith, who has stepped out of her role at Caris Health to lead the new rural health division of CentraCare. When I spoke with them, I wanted to know what is going to be different. But first, I also wanted to know their backstory, how they chose a life in medicine. Joy Plowman got us started with this.
Yeah, so ever since I was little, I've wanted to be a nurse. You know, anytime there was a neighborhood accident, whether that was a skinned knee, somebody fell off their bike, whatever it was, I was right there. And I would, again, you know, bandage them up, make sure it was clean, all that stuff, wash my hands. And then just shortly after that, I would often faint. And going to the doctor myself, anytime that I had my finger pricked or I had to get an immunization, I would faint. And, you know, I was known as, I think, the patient who, you know, fell off the high top chair, you know, more than any other patient, because I just couldn't control myself. And so, you know, all throughout my younger ages, you know, even family members would comment about how I took care of people, whether it was my parents or my grandparents or my sisters, and it just is within me. And so it was all I ever wanted to do, and I needed to figure out a way to get over that little simple thing of fainting when I saw blood or feeling pain. And, you know, even when I went off to college, you know, my mom really, honestly, she discouraged me from becoming a nurse. She's like, Joy, you're not going to be able to do that. You faint every time. Nurses can't faint. And I said, but I think I can. And she said, you know what, look, just a couple weeks ago, you fainted. And so I listened to my mom and I went off to college to be a teacher. And about halfway through my freshman year, I said, no, mom, I really do want to be a nurse and I'm going to figure out a way to do this. And so I fainted twice in nursing school, once when we were giving each other immunizations and then once actually when I was an intern here at St. Cloud Hospital. And I saw my first bone marrow biopsy on a 95-year-old woman. And that was really tough. But I told myself, you know, after that second episode of fainting that I needed to figure out a way to get over this. And so I can, again, very vividly remember standing in the corner in the OR during my nursing rotation in the OR, and it was an orthopedic case, and smelling what I smelled and hearing the saw on the bone, like all of those things are still, you know, very vivid in my mind. But I was bound and determined that I was going to be a nurse, and I did it. And I still don't like a lot of, you know, blood and stuff, but so I knew that there were certain, you know, aspects that I probably wouldn't enjoy, such as the OR or the emergency department. But I did find a niche for myself and in being a nurse, and it has been the most rewarding thing that I've ever done. And I've learned a lot about myself and certainly proved my mother wrong, which was a good thing. Along the way as well. So that's my backstory.
That's great. Hey, I have to share with Joy that I'm a fainter too. I fainted almost my first day of medical school, more than once, multiple times during medical school. And actually, while I was watching a laparoscopy, I became very faint, walked out of the room, and you know when you faint, everything closes down. I walked smack into a concrete wall and then ended up in the recovery room on a gurney next to the patient whose surgery I had been watching. That's embarrassing.
Well, Cindy, what's your backstory then?
You know, I don't come from a world of medicine. My dad was, he's deceased now, was a truck driver. And my mom got a 2-year degree in elementary education and actually worked in our trucking business. And I was the first one in my immediate family to get a college degree. So honestly, thinking about going into medicine, thinking about being a doctor was something that was not something that anybody ever thought about. You know, it was like going to the moon in my family. But to me, it looked like a career where I could make a difference. And I had been very interested in a variety of different English classes and all kinds of different things in high school, but took a science class from one of the best teachers ever, who was a physiology instructor, and got me very intrigued with science and the human body. And the opportunity to put that together with making a difference in people's lives was what drove me into medicine. And of course, rural medicine. I grew up in a small town. I'm a rural girl. I'll born rural, raised rural, will die rural. Country's in my bones and they can't take that out of me, so.
I love knowing that. Tom, you know I'm coming to you next.
Well, it's a little embarrassing because I didn't plan to be in medicine. Nobody in my family that I ever knew was in medicine. And I kind of fell into it, as I've told many, I'm an accidental doctor. I was going to be a psychologist. And it, through some twists and turns, I did end up applying to one medical school and got in. And then during gross anatomy, I had a bit of a crisis of consciousness, just dealing with mortality and wondering whether I had gone into medicine for the right reasons. It hadn't been thought through very well. So I spent a lot of time thinking and soul searching, and kind of came to the conclusion that if I was to do it in service of humanity, that it would be okay. And that's really what got me first thinking about a sense of a higher calling and purpose.
Well, you've taken us right into the heart of this conversation. I mean, in your case, you chose to become a pediatrician, chose to move to St. Cloud, Minnesota, and become a part of a practice and raise your family here. And then in the last couple of years, you chose to lead. Now, we all have our own personal motivation for the choices we make in our lives and how we give our lives meaning and purpose. What can you tell us about that for you?
Well, I break it down into three categories. One is the practice of medicine, the science, the rigor, and what I call angelic faces, how many cute little kids' eyes I've gotten to look into over 30 years. And you know, sometimes people will say, well, but you have to deal with the parents. Well, you know, my experience has been that the vast majority of parents absolutely want only the best for their kids. And if once they can feel from you that you really care, that bond is incredibly powerful. And that's been a blessing to be able to experience that throughout my career. And the two other categories are our community, sense of belonging to a community, whether it's your work community or community of St. Cloud or Central Minnesota. And the final one is servant leadership. Sort of said earlier, I was an accidental doctor. I consider myself somewhat of an accidental leader as well. I certainly would not consider myself a leader in high school or somebody. I think I would have been voted the least likely to be a leader in my high school class. So, you know, life is funny that way, right? I mean, we go through twists and turns and doors open up, but I find a commonality of service. I think if we offer to serve in leadership for the right reasons, again, it's a fulfilling way to serve humanity and your the other members of the organization.
Indeed. Joy, thinking about serving humanity, we're in the midst of a pandemic. CentraCare and CARES Health are certainly on the front lines of serving the needs of so many in your communities. And before your current leadership role, you were the incident commander for the system's response to COVID-19. Now, based on everything you've all gone through in the last year, and I think having the three of you, all three caregivers, now leading the caregiving, what will be different? What needs to be different?
I think for me personally, going through the pandemic, you know, with 13,000 people, has been, I mean, you know, something that we will experience only once in a lifetime. And, you know, the lessons that we learned and the ideas that our staff put forward for change, you know, moving IV pumps outside of the patient's room so they didn't have to use as much personal protective equipment. You know, how to engage with families when we needed to restrict visitors. Our team members have a lot of ideas because they're the ones that do the work, whether you work in billing or health management or right along the bedside. And we want to hear ideas, suggestions, and to work with teams to really incorporate the best evidence and the latest evidence. We want to try things and to sometimes not be successful and to regroup and try again. It's okay. But I don't think that really any of the three of us are the type of person that likes to be known as the status quo or to have things stay the same. The world is changing around us and we need to change as an organization as well.
And I heard Joyce say that we need to celebrate failure. I think that's really important because failure is very relative. If you've got a new idea and you've tried it and it didn't achieve the 100% success that you envisioned, it probably achieved something that was very valuable. And we need to celebrate that and celebrate that we tried and celebrate what we learned from it and celebrate how we can move forward in another direction. The other thing I heard as part of listening is that people need to be able to not only have an idea, but to implement that idea and see it come with action. Everyone comes to work every day wanting to make a difference for somebody else. I mean, that's why you're in healthcare, right? But if we don't give people that opportunity, give everybody at the level of work that they're doing, the authority to make a difference and feel like every single day they've done something with purpose, then we're not doing our jobs. So we need to be accountable, make sure people know what they're accountable for and to whom, make sure that things are getting done, but make sure that individuals have the authority to make a difference in someone else's life every single day.
And that helps unlock intrinsic purpose. It gives a sense of agency and is really the magic that allows people to function as a team that is just beyond expectations.
Is that what you hope to do with your collective leadership? Unlock the intrinsic purpose that people feel?
Absolutely. I think, you know, right now we've talked about this as an inflection point and a turning point for all of us and our leadership. But, you know, we really do want people to engage with us and to take some time and to reflect about, you know, why it is you do what you do, to really reflect on your purpose and the gifts and the talents that you have to share with your team members and those that you intersect with. And to share that readily and openly. I think, again, as we've learned by doing so, it reaffirms our deep commitment every time we say it and we explain it. And it just motivates me, I know for me, even more to show up every day and to commit to addressing, you know, the tough stuff that lays ahead. And in order for us to become the organization that we really all want to be.
And one way to do that is to apply the lessons learned during the pandemic, right?
I think people are far more willing now to let go of, that's the way we've always done it. When I want to make a difference, when I'm really trying hard to find out we can't change, and someone answers that question with, because that's the way we've always done it, I won't accept that answer. So I would challenge everyone, if you've got a great idea and you're stymied or you hit a brick wall and somebody says, no, you can't do that or we can't do that, ask why not, particularly if when it comes to delivering really good patient care or improving patient experience or improving engagement or improving alignment, why not? Why can't we do it? And maybe there's really valid reasons for it. Technically, maybe it requires technology we don't have yet. or, you know, maybe it requires people we don't have yet, but maybe we do have the ability and we just need to think a little bit differently about it. So I would really challenge all of us to challenge ourselves and to ask, why not? Why can't we do those things that will make everything better for the people we serve and the people who serve the people we serve?
And you know, to Cindy's point, I actually have a sticky that I keep on my computer. I have several, as some people know, but it's a reminder to myself, instead of saying no or jumping to that conclusion, to say, what would it take to? And to really try to frame that in a positive, more optimistic way and to explore those possibilities before I say no. And I think it's important that we all look at what lies ahead in that lens.
I think now we have a glimpse of these three leaders and the spirit they bring to their roles. You can learn more about Tom Shrupp, Joy Plowman, and Cindy Firkin-Smith in the My Why section of one.centercare.com or follow their blogs. As the three of them step into their leadership together, one of CenterCare's founding physicians, surgeon Dr. Jim Lundeen, scrubbed in for the last time last week before retiring. For those of you who go back a few decades, and I know there are a few, Dr. Lundeen was known as one of the three Jims, a group of three physicians that included Dr. Jim Jost and Dr. Jim DeVink, who along with Terry Platson were able, as Joy Plowman just said, to explore possibilities. Think of all the people served because of them and you over the years. And if you wonder about the impact any one person can have on others, take a look at the video tribute to Dr. Lundeen by his colleagues after leaving the OR last week. You'll find it on one.centercare.com as well. And by the way, Dr. Lundeen assisted his daughter, also a surgeon, Dr. Andrea Lundeen-Kaless, in that last surgery. A recent conversation with Andrea proved that apples truly don't fall far from the tree. That's it for this week. Join me again for more stories, people, and purpose on One Center Care. Until then, take good care.